I'm going to stand right here so I can go have a seat as soon as I get through. Welcome. And we appreciate you being here to this special occasion and event. We are going to witness history again. Kirkland is full of history and has a long history. And as many of you know, we're going to be celebrating our 100th birthday next month. And as a part of that celebration, we want to look at something else that's a part of history, and that is debate. The formalized process of arguing. Logically. Logical argument, as I understand, is what debate is. And so we're going to engage in that tonight. Hopefully there'll be levity, some fun, but we'll also see the skill and talent of these individuals from the University of Washington and from Northwest University. I thank the teams for being here. I thank our panel of judges, and we'll talk more about that later. I see our deputy mayor is here. I want to thank her for being here, and we'll have, hopefully you'll stick around. We'll have comments from you later. And with that, I would like to introduce our commentator for the evening, and that is Chris Severs.
Thank you. Is this where you want me to speak? Thank you very much. My name is Christy Siver, and I am the head coach of the debate team at the University of Washington. I'm a student in the political science department there, and we're very excited to be here. And we want to thank Gary Gillespie of Northwest University for taking on a real lead role, and Janice for helping host this great event. I'm here today not to talk too much. Hopefully we'll leave that to debaters, but I did want to give you an idea of the format and the kind of debate you're going to be seeing tonight. Parliamentary debate, as these debaters will participate in it, is based on the British House of Commons, which is a much more lively, kind of loose kind of debate. Unlike the United States Congress, they do not allow prepared speeches. So the kind of speeches you'll see tonight are very much like what you see on the House of Commons. They are extemporaneous, and they are based on notes prepared during the debate. Now, in this case, of course, the students had the topic in advance, but I think you'll see that the debate will still be extremely lively and not necessarily as scripted sometimes as you see on congressional debates on C-SPAN. To give you a little idea of the format, you have it in your brochure, but the government will speak first and last. To compensate for that advantage, you'll see that the opposition will actually speak twice in a row. That's considered the opposition block, where the member of opposition will speak in the last of the constructive process, and then the leader of opposition will begin the rebuttals. Let's see. Although there's no formal questioning period, the students will be allowed to raise points of information during the other opposing side's speech. So you'll see that after the first minute, you'll hear a knock from our timekeeper. That means that it now is the time for questions if the opposing side has questions. Then at the beginning of the last minute of your speech, you'll hear another knock. And that will mean that the time for questioning is over and that speaker's protected time has begun. Now, those questions can occur during the first four speeches, which are considered constructive speeches. This is the time when the teams are busy building up their arguments. So they'll introduce all kinds of information in both in those first four speeches. Then, after the last member of opposition constructive speech, we'll start with the rebuttals. And this is the time when the speaker should really be emphasizing to you not necessarily all the minutiae and details that have come up in the debate, but the most important parts that they want you to remember when you're going to be making your decision. Now, obviously, in 32 minutes of the constructive time, there are going to be a lot of issues that are going to be brought up, some that you might consider really important. But you'll want to remember that since the debaters want to avoid sounding like an auctioneer, they're going to try and frame for you the debate that in the issues that they want you to vote on. At the end of our debate, we will escort the judges out so that they're sequestered and their decision is based only on their opinion. But then we will ask for your audience vote before we begin to have our commentators give their perspective on the debates. And then we will have your pro and con speeches. Now, very last bit of the rules. That's the last bit of the rules. Now I'm going to go ahead and introduce the speakers. For Northwest University, beginning the debate, we have the Prime Minister, Jordan Goddard. I'm not going to go into his entire bio, which is extremely impressive. You have that in your brochure. But he is a senior, and he is a major in communications. Our member of government from Northwest University is Casey DeGennaro. He is a senior, and he is a major in music. For the University of Washington, the leader of opposition is Chris Burke. He is a junior, and his major is political science. The member of opposition is Paul Drutman, and he's also a junior, major in political science. Our judges today, we have a pretty esteemed panel. First, I'll begin with Megan Brinkman, who is a graduate student in the University of Washington in the Education Department, and she's a former Northwest debater and team captain. Then we have Dustin Bueller, who is a law student at the University of Washington Law School. He's a former debater from Willamette University and a former world record holder for the world's longest lecture. So you can ask him about that. Be glad that he's not speaking tonight. Then we have Kim Van Ekstrom, who is the community affairs manager from Redmond and a former debater for Lewis and Clark College. Gail Tarleton, who is the director of corporate and foundation relations for the College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Washington, and she's also a former debate champion in Massachusetts. And finally, we have Teresa Gillespie, who is a professor of political science and law at Northwest University and a graduate of University of Washington Law School, so I guess her loyalties are kind of divided. Finally, our commentators. The first is Mary Lynn Vadine, who is a colleague of mine at the University of Washington in the communications department, and she's a former competitor at Lewis and Clark College, not Willamette, in case that you got confused from that from the brochure. Also, we have Paul Nystrom, who is a manager with Safeco in Bellevue, and he is a former championship debater at Northwest University. So without further ado, I'm going to take my role as the Speaker of the House and call this House to order to debate the motion. The proposition we'll be debating tonight is, when it comes to livability, the East Side is better than the West Side. And I now recognize the Prime Minister to give a speech no longer than 7 minutes.
Well, I'd just like to begin by thanking Janice Perry and the City of Kirkland for making this whole event possible. I'd also like to thank Christy Siver for that wonderful introduction and for preparing our wonderful team on the UW side here, as well as Gary Gillespie, our own coach, who's done a lot to get us ready. I'd also like to thank Paul and Chris for what I'm sure is going to be a great debate, and my partner Casey for, someone's got to have my back. In my 20-some years on this earth, I sometimes feel that I've met a lot of people, seen a lot of things, done much. But when I reflect back on a centennial anniversary, on 100 years of history, it kind of puts it into perspective for me. I haven't seen all that much. I haven't met that many people, especially when it comes to a place like the greater Seattle area and all the culture and history that's gone on here. And while when I reflect back on that culture and history, I do have to admit that Seattle has the longer history and possibly the more developed culture to go with it. I think that when we look to the future, in the future, we're going to be looking to the East Side as the bastion of culture, history, and growth. And because of that, I must stand resolved that when it comes to livability, the East Side is better than the West Side. I'd like to first offer up a standard or a criterion, a frame to put this debate into so that we can all understand how we should be evaluating it. And I do so with a hypothetical question. If you were moving to this area for the first time, where would you plant your family? I want you to keep that question in the back of your mind through this whole night. And when you come to your decision, I want you to ultimately ask yourself that and weigh out the points we've made tonight and decide where you would plant your family for the future. And I think you're going to see that the answer firmly lies on the east side of Lake Washington. I'm going to present four reasons. While I believe there's many, many more good reasons to come to the east side, I'm going to talk about the great economic potential we have here. Then I'm going to talk about our wonderful public school system, our exemplary safe neighborhoods, and finally, the traffic and accessibility issue. So let's begin with the economy. When I look back on the history of Seattle's economy, well, I have to admit it's a little bit spotty. You may find out in your studies that the term Skid Row actually began right here. You see, Seattle was based around a single industry, timber. And when things got tough, people used to line up for, well, almost miles in front of the timber mills waiting for a job by where they used to skid the trees in to be processed. That's where the term Skid Row came from. Now, Seattle's come a long way, and it's evolved into a manufacturing center with Boeing at its backbone. Unfortunately, the national economy seems to be moving away from manufacturing. And recently, any news we've heard about Boeing involves how many jobs they're cutting, what city they're going to be relocating to, not tremendous economic growth. Then when we look over to the rich web that has been formed economically on the east side, I think we see the future. We see companies like Microsoft, world leaders in the software industry, not to mention Nintendo, another software giant. And there's also a plethora of other companies that have sprung up to support these major players. Companies like Intuit, who makes software like QuickBooks, and countless other support agencies to help build our economy. And as a result, the East Side has become one of the fastest growing regions in the state. However, there's more than just economic reasons to come to this side of the lake. Ooh. There's also the school system. We have an exemplary school system on the East Side. If you go to the Washington State Superintendent of Public Instruction's website, Dr. Terry Burgesson ranks all the high schools, public high schools in the state. 9 of the top 10 are on the east side. When you look for the first Seattle school to make the list, well, it's not even in the top 50, I'm afraid. But that's not all. Actually, I'd like to take your point. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Can you explain the means in which these statistics were gathered?
The means in which they were gathered. I'm sorry, I actually didn't do that much research into the state superintendent of public instruction's methodology there, I must admit. However, she's not the only one who's come to the same conclusion. For example, Newsweek ranks all the schools in the country on a nationwide basis. Guess what? You'll find Bellevue school districts ranked in the top 25. Seattle doesn't even make the list. And that's not all. You see, the Department of Education right now is kind of cracking down on Seattle because in certain areas where, well, frankly, there's a more mixed demographic, Seattle schools lag way far behind. And what the Department of Education has pointed out is if you look just on the other side of the lake in areas that have similar demographics, such as Renton and Kent, their schools are actually above average. So I think we've seen that the east side is where the quality schools are. Additionally, there's the crime issue. When we look at the FBI report of offenses, we see that the east side is actually a tremendously safe place. We have less than 1/4 the per capita rate of violent crime in this country. That's a tremendous safety record we have here. Additionally, when you look at traffic and accessibility, I think the point clearly goes to the east side. You're essentially dealing with a planned community on one side and an unplanned community on the other side. I remember when I heard one of my favorite comedians make a joke, Stephen Wright. He said, "I used to live once on a one-way dead-end street." My reaction was, "I didn't know he was from Seattle." And I'm sure you all know what I mean when you, if you've ever been to Seattle. It can be a maze of one-way streets, where over on the east side, we have a grid of numbered streets that make it easy to get to where you're going. In fact, I can get to Quest Field faster than some people can from Ballard. When it comes to accessibility, the fact is that when you live on the east side, you can get to where you want to go. It doesn't take you hours, and you're not going to get lost in the process. Just look at the difference between I-5 and 405. One is a two-lane ancient interstate that needs to be, something needs to be done about it. It's got more pockmarks on it than Edward James Olmos' face, to be honest. Then you got I-405, a wonderful modern interstate, an example of what you're going to find on this side of the lake. So when you ask yourself, where do I want to plant my family? Where do I want to see my children grow up? Where is the future? I think when you look to the economy and the booming industry on the side, the wonderful school districts, the extremely safe neighborhoods, and the well-planned out traffic system that gives us access to the things we want to do, the places we want to go, the answer is simple. I'm staying on the east side.
I now welcome the Leader of the Opposition.
Well, thank you, Madam Speaker, for that recognition. I'd like to also begin with a few thank yous. First and foremost, Gary Gillespie, for giving us this opportunity to have this forum today to discuss these important issues, or at least interesting issues, for the two communities that are growing at vast proportions. And, of course, to our colleagues at Northwest, who are wonderful debaters, and it's good to be a part of this process. But the biggest thank you I'd like to extend is to our all-volunteer coaches at UW, to Christy Siver, Mary Lynn Vineen, who have a basically without pay, without common sense, have engaged in hours upon hours of labor in order to actually create a team at UW when we are, in fact, only student-run. And so thank you first and foremost. There is nobody like you guys. You guys are just great. Also, I'd like to say that if you like what you hear today, we are in fact a student-run organization. UW does not institutionally fund us right now, and that if you like what you see, please show your support. Go out there, write, call, don't throw rocks, but to be active, try to show your support for the team, because we think that debate is, of course, an important activity. It needs to be extended, and a university such as the UW should have institutional funding. With that, also, I'd like to thank everybody here for attending. But now, let's discuss the debate at hand. The resolution before us today is that when it comes to livability, the east side is better than the west side. In order to understand the implications of this resolution, it's important to offer some analysis of the term livability. Livability itself is an essentially contested concept. The perimeter of meaning that exists around it is something that nobody can really agree upon. We all know that it incorporates things like food, water, and shelter, but we at the UW believe that it is more nuanced than that, that culture is another important element that we need to look at. Perhaps the biggest one, because remember that culture is those elements in society that we shape, but also that reshape us. It's important to realize that all of the things around us within a society help to create our quality of life, and that is intrinsic to livability itself. With that, the first thing I'd like to discuss is that idea of culture itself. One thing that is unique to Seattle is the idea of urban life. We feel that community is an organic, community itself is organic, that basically it creates something that I would like to call a feedback of culture. That when people's experiences with culture and with society and with diverse demographics and ideas serve to basically regenerate that type of culture that we love, that when you experience culture, you can become a part of its creation, that when you live in a city, you become a part of that organic whole that serves to create something better for society. We feel that culture itself is not something that you can commute to on a daily basis. It's something that you must be a part of, and as on the west side, we feel that Seattle as a cultural center, is fed by the people that live within its boundaries. But let's look at some of the specific information. But before I go into that, I'll gladly take your point.
Thank you. Can you please explain what is the boundary that creates a divided culture? In other words, why don't we have, or why don't you believe we have, a common culture between both sides?
Well, of course there are going to be similarities between culture, but what we argue is that within a community, if you are going outside, when you wake up every morning and you are a part of that city, you can't escape it, you can't go away, you are going to be more attuned to the needs of that community. You're a part of that healthy organism that is the city itself. In order to expand on this idea of culture, it's important that we not just simply talk about abstract terms, but we look at some of the actual pragmatic things that are important of everyday life that we think that you can experience in Seattle. The first thing of which is that idea of music, art, and theater. Seattle is home to the Seattle Art Museum, the Asian Art Museum, and alternative art projects such as the Urban Art Project, which enables inner-city youth to actually be a part of turning graffiti into a form of art and actually enabling new forms of culture and artwork. Also, the idea of enabling access. One thing that we are particularly proud of at the UW is this idea of the Urban Debate League that's been created, that basically the community has been able to bind around this idea that people do not have access to debate. There are certain centers of Seattle that basically, because of demographics and poverty, are not able to have access to that activity. And because we're able to bind together and in a form of social cohesion, we're able to actually give people a chance to take part in this wonderful activity with, that is on display today. We also have those things that we also are, Seattle is very, very progressive in the idea of Tent City, providing for the homeless. Kirkland also has done a lot of work in this realm. But Tent City itself and its particular strong point in Seattle is a testament to the city's community action towards all sorts of problems that it might possibly face. One thing that I particularly enjoy about Seattle is also the protest culture. In Seattle, you can have everything from an AIDS walk to Hemp Fest. And I think that that spirit of culture itself is something that we need to embrace. Race, because we need to it's important when looking at any sort of community that we need to be able to try to reshape those forces that are shaping us, and that by protesting, by acting against those laws that we feel that are unjust or those causes, that what we enable is a better world, a community that is able to act out on its own behalf. And that culture enables Seattle to overcome a lot of the difficulties that come from a rapidly expanding city. But with that, let's look to some of the positions that have been offered by the by the government team. The first thing they discuss is the idea of the economy, the idea of Skid Row, and that Boeing is old and new technologies are emerging. Well, the first response that I'd like to give is that the idea of new jobs is that according to a Post Intelligencer report from August of this year, 85% of new jobs within Washington State originate within the city of Seattle. We think that this new growth is an engine that drives the economy and ultimately allows people to maintain a standard of living. We also within Seattle have sectoral diversity, which is just a fancy term for the idea that we have many things that you can possibly do. We have diverse career choices. We have agriculture, we have environmental technologies, we have maritime industry, we have biotechnologies. That diversity itself is a strength because we feel that having a monogamous economy that in which you are solely focused on the tech industry is particularly dangerous, especially in an era in which outsourcing is a particularly big deal and that rapid shifts in the economy can actually cause a tremendous amount of problems. The next thing that I'd like to look at as well is the idea that simply work is not just an issue of, well, which side is going to make more money on that, but labor is something that's a part of the human condition. It's doing something that you love, and having access to a diverse economy is something that is important to feed your own existence, and so that is something that we feel comes with diversity. As for the issue of education, one thing that we'd like to say at the very beginning is that education is not something that is quantifiable. It's something that emanates from society that embraces inclusion. We don't think that the schools are the only sources of education, that we think that society around and everything that is a part of the city serves as education itself. So quantification is almost impossible. But the second thing, after I get through this point, is the idea of resources in Seattle. We have numerous libraries. The Seattle Public Library, not only being a strange feat of architecture, is also a great resource for any possible thing you could possibly want. We have public and private universities that serve to enrich the intellectual atmosphere of Seattle itself that that is pretty much unseen in many different parts of the United States. Additionally, we have the idea of access as well, is that we have a very heterogeneous population within Seattle, and that we are proud to say that those resources, that educational resources, are accessible to all. We have different aspects for different people, so that way we are enabling those to have an ability to access that idea of education. Now, the next issue of the idea of crime. Well, first of all, we like to say that this is an unfortunate side effect of a dynamic society working against these particular problems, that is something in progress, but also note that violent crime is actually on the decline, and that we are, in fact, promoting those safe society and through activism and promoting change. As for the issue of transportation, which is something that obviously we're all very concerned with, Seattle is in fact leading the way. We have one of the liveliest bike cultures. We have the Burke-Dillman Trail, Discovery Park, Green Lake, all these things that embrace alternative forms of transportation. We are leading the way with biodiesel, which is a great way to provide for environmentally friendly transit as well as mass transit. And we also feel that Kirkland, most likely within the next 10 years, will be annexing huge amounts of territory that could possibly triple its population and will feel the same growing pains that Seattle has felt without the last two decades. So for the very first time, we as the opposition would beg to oppose. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now recognize the member of government.
I just want to extend some thank yous. Thanks for coming to this great debate. I think debate's one of the best ways that public opinion can be changed, can be expressed, and just can be enjoyed in a very eloquent fashion. So thank you for all coming, those watching on the broadcast, and for all those that might see this on a rebroadcast, thanks for listening. I want to basically jump into this debate, in this topic of culture, because this is really the main idea that the opposition is using to oppose this case. That we have, that the east side is better than the west side when it comes to livability. They agree with us that, yes, livability includes whether you're going to be able to live in a secure environment, an environment where you have food, water, and shelter. And it seems that they don't want to oppose the idea that the west side is almost inferior in many fashions to the east side on this point, because over here on the west side, we do have less crime, we do have less violent offenses, which make this a much more secure area to live. We're one quarter the national average, where Seattle is actually above the national average. But this idea of culture, this is a more abstract concept, so it's going to need a little bit more abstract remarks to go against it, because the first thing about culture is you don't need to be actually there where the culture is happening to be a part of that culture. For example, the people on Capitol Hill can enjoy what kind of cultures go on in the downtown Seattle area just as easily as someone in Linwood can, just as easily as someone over on Alki Beach can, just as easily as someone on the other side of the 520 bridge can. The idea of culture, you don't need to be within that exact point where that culture is happening to be part of the greater Seattle culture. Over here on the east side, we're in Bellevue, Kirkland, Redmond. If you're in one of these towns, you can participate in the different festivals that go on in the greater Seattle area just as easily as someone on Alki Beach or in White Center can. You don't need to actually be someone that lives on those exact street corners to be a part of the culture that's happening on those street corners. Yes, sir.
Do you think it is a different concept when you have to wake up in the morning and you're a part of that culture than when you can escape it and drive away, say, 20 minutes? What do you think is the difference?
To what are you referring?
For instance, if somebody coming from Kirkland going into Seattle to be a part of a protest, for instance, and somebody that actually is living in that community and forced to deal with it.
The problem with that is that, take for example, if a large protest is going to be happening in the Seattle Center, there are very few people that live within, say, a quarter mile or half mile of the Seattle Center that are really actually a part of that in where they live. Most people are going to be coming from Capitol Hill, Alki Beach. They're going to be coming from locations that they're going to have to drive through, whether they're on the west side or the east side. So this idea that somehow the two bridges divide the culture of the greater Seattle area, I just don't see this happening. When Bumper Shoot went on, I found myself going down to the concerts that were happening down there just as easily as someone on Alki Beach could, or someone in Linwood or Ballard could. So the idea that the only way you can truly experience the Seattle life is to be someone who lives in the Seattle area or in the Seattle metropolitan area is simply not true. They talk about this idea that the urban culture, you start to have a feedback of culture because you're living there. But I have to say that the east side, you might have the same kinds of cultures, because the east side, on a per capita basis, yes, as far as the sheer number of, say, art galleries, might be greater in the metropolitan Seattle area, you're going to find on a per capita basis just as many art galleries, just as many concert halls here on the east side. You go down to Kirkland Performing Arts Center, you're going to find world-class festivals and concerts and theater performances that are going to be happening down there that will be able to rival those that are are happening on the east, that are those that are happening on the west side. Yes, we don't have Seahawks Stadium, but you have to ask yourself, Seahawks Stadium, the Seahawks, where do the Seahawks actually live? They live on the east side. Why is this? Because the livability of the east side is greater. Yes, there might be a couple of entertaining things that go on in the Seattle area, but anyone can get over there. I get over to the occasional football game just like someone from Linwood or Ballard might. So the idea that the culture has, you have to be within an area to experience that culture to the fullest, I just don't see as true. And furthermore on this idea, they wanted to talk about how the Seattle embraces some of their struggles and the Seattle area embraces some of their needs. One of the ones that they brought up was this Urban Debate League. And while I do commend the University of Washington for participating in a very worthwhile cause, such as the Urban Debate League, this all, at the same time, shows a symptom of an actual problem that the Seattle schools are having, where they don't have the ability to fund their own debate teams. They don't have the ability to fund their own ideals within their school. You look to the east side and you don't see problems like this. The east side schools are ranked in the top in the country, they're ranked in the top in the state, and the reason for this is because they don't need things like the Urban Debate League. While the Urban Debate League is a great thing, it's a mending, it's a patch job for a problem that exists. Over on the east side, the reason why we don't have programs like this is because we don't need them. A similar analogy could be boasting that you have the most number of homeless shelters. Well, yes, it says you're doing a good job at solving a problem. It all at the same time tells that, yes, there is a problem there, where some place that might not have them doesn't have quite the problem. Now, they wanted to talk about the idea of Tent City. And yes, they are right to say that Tent City is happening on the east side. For that matter, Tent City has been happening longer on the east side than it's been happening in the Seattle metropolitan area. So if you want to consider the Tent Cities to be a good idea, that's a good idea that originated, that started, the activism started on the east side. Now let's jump back up into the ideas my partner brought up and talk about some of these issues that the opposition would like to bring. The first is this idea that 85% of new jobs originate in the Seattle area. The whole Seattle area, not just the metropolitan Seattle area. If you go to monster.com or you go to Career Builder or jobs.yahoo, you'll see that there's a comparable number of jobs in the Seattle metropolitan area as there is in the Seattle east side area. This statistic is true that the greater Seattle area has probably up to upwards of 85% of the new jobs, but that's all of Seattle. It's pretty hard to believe that it's just the small couple of blocks of downtown Seattle or a couple of miles of downtown Seattle that have 85% of the new jobs that are happening in this entire state, especially when considered that some of the west side's jobs, for example, Boeing, has lost in recent month 18,000 jobs. When you consider things like this, you have to see that, well, maybe one reason why they have to create new jobs is to make up for a lack or for a surge in unemployment that's been happening because of large companies on the west side that have been moving out of there. When you look to the tech industry, you see the tech industry on the east side has been booming. For that matter, this idea that the opposition would like to bring up, that somehow we only have one single kind of job, tech, on the east side, is simply untrue. We have copious numbers of colleges over here, and good universities, if I'd say so myself. And because of that, we also have educational opportunities and education positions. Like we said earlier, there's many schools that have non-higher educations but public education programs. You also see that the diversity of jobs extends to Costco, which is originated here on the east side. It also extends to the numerous numbers of corporate parks that are over here. So the idea that there's not very diverse opportunities on the east side is simply not true. They might not be the same kind of diversity, but you can see that they are diverse. And they are quality jobs that are being bought and that are booming here on the east side. This idea of public education was also brought up by the opposition. And on this point, they wanted to talk about how there's public libraries and how there's many public and private universities. On that idea of public and private universities, we have them over here as well. Public libraries, I love the Kirkland Library. We have libraries scattered throughout our side as well. The idea of culture, the idea of economy, the idea of schools, and the idea of security. You can see for greater livability, it's only on the east side.
Thank you very much. We now welcome the member of the opposition.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, for that introduction. I also as well have some thank yous that I would like to get through before the debate round. First of all, I would like to thank the City of Kirkland for allowing us to have this debate today. I think debate is a wonderful activity that allows us to present our different worldviews in a very, very friendly environment, and I think a lot of times in our society that sort of gets lost, and we don't realize how important discussion is to actually producing real-world change. Second of all, I would like to thank our coaches, Marilyn Vadine and Christy Cyber, for dedicating pretty much all of their time to us, and we love you guys for it. Finally, I would like to thank our opponents from the University of Northwest, because I think without them, there would be no debate round, and I think throughout this round, you're seeing why education itself and why discourse itself is a very important notion, and the only way we can actually achieve this is for all of us to come together and realize that this is a forum for us to discuss our ideas in a very compelling manner. With this in mind, the debate itself. The first idea I would like to talk about is the idea of culture, because I think it's one of the most important issues that we bring up in this round. Now, the idea that you don't actually have to be a part of culture in order to experience it, I think, is a little bit flawed. First of all, I think as long as you're not a part of a certain culture, it's very hard for you to actually take pride in your culture. And therefore, I think the analysis that we give is pretty valid, because we talk about how the culture not only shapes you, but also shapes individuals around you. So what that means, as long as when you have to drive to get to a certain place, that means that you're not truly taking a part of a culture, which means like I can always drive to Los Angeles to experience their culture, but I'm not truly there all the time, which means I'm not really acting on the culture, and I have really no means of shaping the culture of Los Angeles. Whereas if you live on the West Side, you get a first-hand experience in how the culture works and how the culture actually acts. You're still protected. I'm Jordan. I'm sorry. Sure. Go ahead.
Thank you. Can I ask how many times you have walked yourself from, I believe, would you live in the U District? How many times have you walked to the Seattle Center? Just curious.
Actually, it's quite funny you ask that, because I work for Banana Republic, and sometimes I have to work morning shifts where there are no buses that can take me there, so I actually do have to walk, or actually longboard, or bike in some cases. So I actually thank the City of Seattle for actually providing me with some trails so I can get from my house to my means of employment. Without it, I probably wouldn't be debating, so... The next argument I'd like to talk about is the idea of culture being on the East Side as well. While we do recognize that Kirkland and the East Side have a lot of really good things, we obviously on the opposition believe that there are some unique benefits that you can only get from the West Side. First of all, we talk about the idea of the Urban Art Project as well as the Seattle Art Museum, which offer numerous opportunities for different individuals to actually express their ideas to the public, which are sometimes lost on the East Side. But I think another important argument is that the West Side culture is also the source of the culture of protest, and that actually impacts livability quite nicely. Now, the reason why the culture of protest is important in this debate round is because it is our job as individuals in a democratic society to actively question the norms that exist in our society on a daily basis. Without a healthy discussion, it's very hard for us to actually produce actual change. And as long as we have numerous examples that point to you that the culture of protest actually originates on the West Side, you realize that culture itself is not a tourist activity that we all can drive across the lake to. It's actually something that actually shapes us and shapes our basic identity and shapes our ability to act as individuals. So they make a very interesting argument saying that, well, if you want to talk about where everyone lives, you know, the Seahawks live on the East Side. Well, that's quite interesting, but I think on the West Side we have such renowned musicians as Dave Matthews and Pearl Jam. So you be the judge. Now, on the idea of urban debate league, oh, sure, Jordan, I'm sorry.
Are you saying Candlebox isn't world-renowned?
Sure, why not? The next issue I'd like to discuss is the issue of the Urban Debate League, because I think it's a clear example of a time when a community saw a problem that was happening and took great action to actually fix it. Now, the argument that our opponents present is that it's merely a symptom of a problem, which I think is a great argument, but it doesn't really address the internal warrants of the argument that we present. Now, our argument is pretty clear, I think, or at least to me, is that the way that we embrace diversity and the way that we actually look out for the common man and the way that we actually produce the ethic of care is to get involved as a community. And when the Seattle community, particularly those of us who realize that underprivileged youth in the inner cities were being disproportionately affected by the issue of debate because they simply could not participate, and when they got a chance to actually debate, we think that this is a very good example of how the community of the West Side actually rallies around the needs of its members and actually shows us why the West Side is a better place to live, because it simply shows you that people are actually invested in the community. With this in mind, I want to talk about the issue of the economy, which I think is something that impacts all of us on a daily level. Now, the argument that we initially present is that 85% of the new jobs originate on the West Side. The response from our from the government team is that it's the whole Seattle area. But the statistic actually points out that the innovation in terms of new jobs actually originates in the downtown Seattle area. But more importantly, the argument that I think is more important to this debate round is the issue of sectorial diversity. Remember, while they do say that the technology industry is the predominant industry on the East Side, which means that it only allows access to that industry by people who can actually access. For example, as a political science major, I really do not think that I can go on the East Side and get a job working from Microsoft. Bill Gates would probably not hire me. But the argument, I think, is actually more interesting, because we show you that Seattle particularly and the West Side is renowned for actually having different kinds of industries that allow different types of individuals to have access to the system. So when we talk about labor being a part of the human condition and how without it it's basically hard for individuals to survive, you realize that if you don't fit the mold that the government team is trying to present, then the only place to live is actually on the West Side. Now, the next argument that I think is very interesting is the idea of education. Now, I will concede that the East Side has a lot of really good universities and public colleges. In fact, I think Northwest University is one of the top universities in the Pacific Northwest. But I think the argument is still valid that education is not simply about a ranking system that ranks high schools. It's also about allowing various kinds of educational opportunities that are garnered not only at the secondary level, but also at the level of public libraries and providing different types of individuals access to the system. Now, I think the issue of traffic is the next issue that's quite important in this debate, and which I think actually impacts the issue of livability. First of all, Seattle has a very diverse method of transportation that allows access to lots of different people. I have actually briefly touched on this when I talked about the various bike trails that we have. The Burke-Gilman train is actually world renowned for being a very good way for different bikers to get around. More importantly, the Green Lake bike trail and the runway is actually one of the best in the country that I've been to, and trust me, when I came here, I had my pick of where I wanted to be coming from the great state of Texas, but I did choose to settle on the West Side, so. The next argument I want to address is the idea of innovation. I think the reason why at the end of the round you're going to be siding with the University of Washington is because we have clearly demonstrated to you that the culture that you get on the West Side is the culture of innovation and the culture of protest. One example of this is the issue of biodiesel that my partner brings up. Now, while all of the Metro buses now do operate on the biodiesel system, it is important to realize that that system was first tested in the greater Seattle area, particularly on the routes coming from the University District to downtown Seattle, which tells you that the West Side is actually leading the way in actually creating various changes in a community. So, at the end of the debate, I think the issue of livability is greatly affected by the issue of culture. So, as long as Chris and I can prove to you that culture itself is not a tourist activity, I hope that you sign your ballot for the University of Washington. Thank you.
The member of the opposition for concluding the constructive portion of the debate. I now welcome the leader of the opposition to begin the rebuttal.
Sip my Kirkland water. All right, so we have the debate today that's about Costco and Starbucks. So we're essentially telling you to put down the 30-pack of croissants and grab a mocha. But the biggest thing that is going to be important is this idea of culture. Paul is right on when he extends all that analysis. The idea that a community is an organic entity and that you need to be a part of it in order to experience it, in order to have it reshape you, is something that is unique to Seattle. And that is what's going to be important. We know that these are both two great cities. We're here to honor Kirkland as well. But the idea that we're trying to embrace here is that Seattle, with its diversity, with everything that it has to offer, gives us a richer sense of self. And that's why I'm actually from Colorado as well, and I've chosen to go to UW. But it's important that we look to it as being a part of a greater community. But let's look at the specific issues within the round. The most important thing that I want you to look at is this idea of access in the community and the general ethic of care that's being created, is that the community of Seattle is something that is responsive. It is something that constantly, when there is a problem, it is going to work it out. That culture of protest, that culture of change, produces a community that is constantly working towards a better end and a better future. That type of ethic of care that is embodied by the Urban Debate League, that is embodied by Tent City, that is embodied by the Urban Art Project, is something that is a reason to affirm living on the West Side. With that as well, let's look at the analysis that's been offered about the issues of the economy, crime, education, and transportation. On the issue of the economy, I think this is a very clear reason why you're going to go for the University of Washington. We give you the original analysis that to labor is to be a part of being human, and that to have diverse opportunity itself is something that enables you to pick your path. When you don't have that type of diversity in front of you, it is hard to be able to act out your will, and so that is enabling you to have better access. But more concretely and less philosophically, we feel that the economic weakness of Kirkland is its homogeneity. Yes, there are, in fact, different burgeoning industries within Kirkland, but an emphasis on the tech industry is not something that is necessarily stable. We feel that outsourcing and possible threats to the technology sector make it particularly vulnerable to rapid shifts and economic declines. In the issue of education itself, education, once again, is something that we can't put a cap on. It's not something that we can be measured through statistics and so forth. What we feel is that it's a society that embraces inclusion, and we've constantly shown you throughout this round why Seattle is a culture of inclusion, why it is one that is why it is demographically diverse, culturally diverse, and offers a tremendous amount to each one of its citizens. The idea of resources itself being a part of education is important as well, that Seattle simply has more resources. It's not necessarily an issue of per capita. What we are saying is that we have a lot of resources and have the means to access those, that those from every level of society have the ability to access those resources and in whatever way possible. And so that type of enabling aspect of the resource of Seattle is something that is definitely should be affirmed. The idea of transportation is another issue that I think is important. The very idea of Seattle being a pioneer in green-friendly technologies, as well as alternative forms of transportation, such as biking, walking, longboarding, all of those things are wonderful and things that need to be affirmed, and Seattle is leading the way. So when you're comparing these two great cities, what we think that you need to ultimately look at is that idea of that community of change, that community of activism that is so embodied by Seattle. Thousands of people protesting in the street just last weekend dealing with anti-war. We are constantly a society that is working towards positive change, and with that, we think that you should vote for the University of Washington. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I now invite the Prime Minister to conclude the debate.
I think the University of Washington was right when they pointed out that Seattle has a world-renowned culture. I mean, who doesn't think of Seattle whenever they're asked to pay $5 for a cup of coffee, right? Okay, sorry. Anyway, I think they have raised some good points tonight, but, well, I think Chris actually put it best when he said that Seattle is a very responsive community. And that's a great point. It's responsive. It's got problems, and it responds to them. Where here on the East Side, we are a proactive community. We don't respond to problems. We anticipate problems. Look at the transportation grid. Look at the school system. While the points they brought up tonight can be very powerful, they ultimately point to solving problems in an unplanned community. Where if you're bringing your family to this region for the first time, where do you want to go? To the area that's great at responding to problems, or to the area that's great at anticipating problems? And with that in mind, let's run through the individual points of this debate. First, on the culture of protest. I particularly don't believe that there's an invisible cultural force field that exists on the city limits myself. My partner made a great point when he said that you'll find plenty of people from the East Side over at Bumbershoot or at Seahawk Games or at protests or anything else. You see, over here we have a choice. We have accessibility. We can be part of what we choose to be part of. We're not tourists any more than the person from Ballard going to the city center is a tourist. We're part of a shared community here where we have access to many great things. We have access to a great city, and it doesn't matter what side of the lake you live on. I think when it comes to culture, it's essentially a wash. However, when we look to the economic point, I think it clearly comes out on our side. They've talked a lot about sector diversity, but my partner made a great point. They need it. The outsourcing isn't in the tech industry right now. It's in the manufacturing industry. It's in Seattle's backbone where we're seeing a loss of calcium, not on the East Side. In fact, it's a rich web economically that has developed over here. My partner also pointed out that you actually have more corporate parks on the East Side, not per capita, but more corporate parks over here. We actually have more variety, and it's because of smart city planning, a great transportation network, and excellent schools. And that brings me to my next point. They argue that education isn't quantifiable, and I'll grant them that. However, when you ask yourself, where do you want your family to live? You've got a simple choice. Do you go with top-rated schools in the country, or do you value having street-smart kids? Well, you know, there's some value to street smarts, but I'm happy with my education and where it's taking me. And I think you would be happy with it too, as well as your children. Additionally, we have a particularly safe area over here, which I think is just one more feather in our cap. And finally, the issue of accessibility I think is an important one. We have a better system over here. We have a planned system. We have a system that allows for expansion. They pointed out that Kirkland will probably triple in size over the next 3 years. How can it do that? Because it's planned for it. Because it's ready for you to bring your family, because they know that this is the place you want to bring your family. Because this is where the future lies, where the best schools lie, where the job opportunities lie. And as far as expansion goes, anyone on the East Side can tell you that people aren't coming here because of the reasonable real estate prices. It's the tremendous boom in the economy that's bringing people here. It's what brought my family here, and it's what's continuing to bring more and more families here. And it's why you should consider bringing your family to the East Side. Because as wonderful as Seattle is, and for as much culture as it has to offer, I think it's plain that the future lies to the east of the lake. The future lies with companies like Nintendo, Microsoft, and the plethora of other support companies that have popped up around them. The future lies with a nationally renowned education system, public education system, with low crime rates, with a great city plan that's going to allow for expansion, to allow for growth, and allow you to gain access to that wonderful culture that we're all a part of. So yes, we value the culture of protest, we value the music, the art, and all the other great things about Seattle. However, if you really want to enjoy them, I think it's clear. Come to the East Side.
Thank you very much. Now the judges will be escorted out so they can deliberate. And once they are sequestered. Now we will ask for the audience vote. Clap your hands if you feel that Northwest University did the better job of debating. All right, now for the University of Washington. Sounds like Northwest University took it a little bit on. It was very close, though. Let's after that audience vote, we will ask our commentators to give a little bit of feedback on how they saw the debate.
Can we use these microphones?
Yes.
Cool.
Sweet.
Excited about that.
I have to say that I didn't think I would ever hear anybody talk about how 405 was a wonderful state-of-the-art interstate before. But apparently, you know, I might think the same having spent 2 hours sitting on it in my car the other day waiting to get somewhere.
It's a lot of time to meditate, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what did you think overall, Mr. Nystrom, about the competitors?
I thought it was a great debate. I think it's pretty clear that the talent at the University of Washington has moved from the football team onto the debate team. And, of course, I'm always proud of my fellow alum at Northwest. So, one of the things that I thought was interesting was really kind of the way that the debate came down. Northwest framed it in the "where would you bring your family?" Which in the United States automatically brings the thought of white picket fences and houses, which really only addresses a certain segment of the population, because that's not what everybody in the United States is looking for. And I thought it was interesting how the University of Washington kind of turned that around and said that, you know, we've got a whole bunch of other things that aren't just yards, baseball fields, and picket fences over here in Seattle.
Awesome. Well, actually, I have to really commend all four of these students, because the format that they compete in looks very similar to this, but obviously because of the rhetorical situation, because they are giving these speeches in front of an audience of, you know, people who reside both in Kirkland and in Seattle, so there is a measure of you know, personal investment that you all have in this round. They don't exactly argue it the same way that they might in the competitive situation in front of a supposedly impartial judge educator. So I really have to hand it to all four of these gentlemen for adapting so well to the situation. As a scholar, more or less, of rhetoric, this is more of what Aristotle might call an epideictic or ceremonial kind of occasion, which is different and distinct from a really true deliberative or forensic experience or set of argumentation. And to that extent, I really do think that everyone did an excellent job making giving examples, providing examples, but not necessarily always doing as much as they probably could to really compare the impacts of the round, just to basically, and I think that this gets to much of what my colleague was talking about when he was sort of discussing those contrasting criteria, the difference between, you know, where a family of four would want to put down their roots versus, you know, college students coming from Texas and Washington. Those are both very valuable and important parts of a community and of an economy, certainly. And so I think that I personally, as a judge educator, someone who does this a lot and will probably be doing this early in the morning tomorrow for no pay, as has been pointed out, likes to see a little bit more of in the occasion. But I thought that everyone spoke beautifully, very eloquently. I appreciated that. The humor was good for the most part. I actually think that most of the unscripted humor was probably more effective than the scripted, or what I assume to be scripted, but I think that's kind of how humor works. That's part of its trickiness. So overall, I thought everyone did a great job.
Yeah, I agree. And kind of continuing just briefly on some of the things, that points that you brought up about, you know, a little bit of areas where you didn't see a lot of clash and argumentation. And so it seemed like both teams were willing to just simply concede that, well, yeah, Seattle offers a lot more culture and Kirkland offers a lot more safety, or the East Side offers safety. I found it ironic that we were talking about, for example, how people were able to debate in Seattle at a debate in Kirkland, you know, and that obviously that free exchange of information can happen on both sides of the water. And I think it would have been interesting to see some challenges on, does Seattle really represent a true urban center compared to a New York or Boston or Paris or London or Beijing? And I think a lot of us would say that compared to those, not necessarily. And is there that big of a gap between the urban center and what we consider the suburban center here on the East Side? But again,
perhaps
I think
there's a false dichotomy being drawn.
Perhaps. But again, a very interesting debate, and you know, I think both teams did a great job, and I appreciated kind of how everything was just seemed primarily unscripted and off the top of the head.
Yeah, so. I did catch a couple of dropped arguments that went unresponded to on the part of the government. The opposition did make some, I thought, fairly good answers about crime, basically the fact that overall in this country, violent crime has gone down over the course of the last decade, and also just the many examples of ways in which Seattle is really proactively, I think, addressing its planning and transportation issues. And those didn't really come up until the rebuttal. And that's probably okay for our purposes, but in a typical round, those arguments wouldn't necessarily be considered kosher, and they would have to be disregarded by the critic. But as I said, overall, everyone spoke very, very well. So we have 1-2 judges back.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go ahead and thank you guys very much for giving your commentary. And now if there's anyone in the audience who would like to speak on behalf of the East Side or the West Side, we'd like to open up the opportunity for that to happen. So any volunteers to take on the greatest fear, which is that of public speaking? Yes, go ahead. No, I think come forward so one of the microphones will hopefully catch your voice.
Well, I'm a proud East Sider that wish I lived on the West Side tonight, but I agree fully with the commentaries that were just given. Really, when you think about livability, it's not restrictive only to families of 4 or 5. I would consider livable situations for college students such as myself, and for many people in this room as well. I am a student at Northwest, and I reside in one of the apartments furnished by Northwest University. And it does get old sometime being on the East Side. I'm fully convinced I own the only automobile in my zip code that costs under $40,000. And it does get old night after night to live in South Kirkland. And really the biggest thing that's going on is the sale on Slurpees down at 7-Eleven. So, I mean, great. You have education. You have crime rate, which really Seattle has very good records of in both comparatively to the West Coast, I think. But in terms of livability, when you have a bad school system in Seattle, as they've been dubbed today, bad school systems, which I would disagree with just because there's many people at Northwest University that are products of Seattle's very good public system, I would say. When you have problems like that, what's the best thing to do? Is it to run from them, to ignore them, to take your family and steer clear of them? Or is it to integrate yourself and actually work with them and be part of the future of what I think could be a tremendous school system? So my thanks to both sides, and I would definitely live on the West Side given the chance.
Or you can stand anywhere where you can catch a microphone, maybe okay. Even by the commentators. Of course, I'll just stand here.
I actually live on the east side, but I love the west side. The west side is awesome. But I'm, in light of what the both debaters, both teams talked about in today's debate round, I think it makes more sense, the livability issue and really weighing safety, weighing, you know, how what your community is like, how it's made up, how safe it is for children is more important for families. I'm coming more from the family point of view than Gideon was talking about, more like a college student point of view. It is more important to have a safer place to live. Seattle definitely offers a great place for single people, for smaller families, college students. They have a wonderful cultural diversity, and they have really nasty schools, but really great universities. But I think basically the most important issue in light of what was presented today is just the to look at the livability, to look at the safety, to look at traffic, to look at the, and the jobs. The jobs offered, both teams talked about, you know, we have diversity while we have tech jobs. And really, it doesn't really all matter all that much because we have a great job diversity in both areas and people commute a lot. The cities aren't that far apart. And so really, that's the most important thing to look at, in my opinion. And that's pretty much all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Okay. I found that there are a lot of obvious things to say about suburban versus urban, about security versus safety. But not being new to this kind of information, I found the most interesting arguments about the debate were actually ones that were made implicitly, that weren't made explicitly, because there is press time, and so we can't go on about American culture. But the whole idea of the suburban-urban divide, I think, really reflects not necessarily on suburbanites or urbanites, but how Americans, you know, view culture and view how one should live. And I think that was something that was expressed, I believe, by the organic community argument, right? That there's, I think that having lived both suburbanly and now urbanly, that there's, you know, there is a difference about visiting, you know, waking up in the morning feeling safe and then going someplace to be, right? That that this artificial divide we make seems, I think, very bizarre, and we have to question what a community really is. I don't think that there's necessarily a decision between a safe community and an interesting community, and that maybe if we made if we thought about community as something more than units of education or units of museums, that there would be no desperate housewives. that you wouldn't necessarily visit Seattle only in the safe times of day, in the safe parts of the city, so that there probably wouldn't even be having almost this sort of tension between cultures. You would say, well, you know, I'm just as much a Northwestian as you are a University of Washingtonian. And so that implicit argument about how we think about culture, I think, was fascinating, and I would really enjoy listening to it.
Any last takers for the East Side? Yes.
Well, the topic of this debate is almost as wide as the talking about the meaning of life. As almost anything you could say, someone could, you know, it'll cause some ripples in your mind, a protest. But, you know, it is really, when you talk about livability, you know, it's not all about large stores or the quality, the fit and the finish of the East Side is newer than Seattle and so forth, more pleasant and so forth. Because I think we all agree that there are higher aspects of our personality and of a human being where the real issue comes down, yay or nay. And I find that the East Side has been reasonably suitable for exploration of more horizons as I've gone through my 40s and 50s here. And so I can't really complain. And certainly it's way better than a lot of other places that I've been around the world for that aspect. However, I have become increasingly uncomfortable on the East Side with the relatively sterile, you know, cultural environment here. And as someone pointed out, a very excellent point that, you know, culture isn't a tourist activity where you can go and visit an event that's, you know, a two-hour time slot or something like that. Culture is something that resides in individuals and in a diverse individuals, and particularly when they're crammed together in close locations and where they actually have real problems to solve and real things to deal with. For example, building our civilization. Okay, so if we all go out and we expand into a whole bunch of really comfortable houses and distance ourselves from each other, and it's the electric garage door opens and they come home from work and the garage door closes. That's how it is in Kirkland. Okay, this is where culture goes to die, where it terminates. We have an institutional environment here where the only things that we have are our institutions. We have our churches, we have our schools, and we have our companies. There's nothing else in between, increasingly, on the east side, you know. And so it's really up to us to regenerate the American culture and find ways to regenerate American culture here on the east side, in spite of the fact that we've decentralized ourselves and made ourselves all expanded out. So what we have to do is to come out in public like this. The debate is a great idea. I think we should have debates down here every night. You know, I have...
Thank you very much. I think that the comments here represent, and I think that Paul made a really excellent point, that coming from what I've lived in Washington, D.C., I've lived in suburban San Antonio, Texas. I've seen what suburban and urban life really look like. And I think in Seattle and in Kirkland, we enjoy a really great mix of both. And so I think we can all feel that perhaps, you know, both sides really win in this debate. But as I go to announce the actual decision of the debate, there is going to be a winner and a non-winner. I think that the split in this debate really represents that these are issues that are contested, that I think we do need to be thinking about, and that we need to really think about the issues that were raised about culture, about diversity, but also about safety. And I think that the frame of, like, are you a family or are you an individual, is an important one to keep in mind, because while as individuals and as participants in a democracy we want to make our societies better, we also want to have our children be safe. And those are immediate concerns that are really hard to avoid. So in that, today we have a 3-2 decision for the government and the east side from Northwest. All right. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I think maybe we owe the debaters another round of applause for... Thank all the judges. Thank you so much for coming out and giving up your Friday night. Thanks to the commentators, and thanks to those of you for participating in this debate. And I agree, we'll come down. Well, I don't know if we'll come down here every night, but we will definitely come back, and we really appreciate working with Gary Gillespie from Northwest. Thanks so much to the city of Kirkland for hosting us.
I came to say thank you and congratulate our debaters. You did a wonderful job with your public speech, with your research, with your analysis, with your logic, with your wit. And I appreciate it, and we thank you. And you've given us much to think about. Thank you for our first debate here in Kirkland as we establish more history. And hopefully it won't be our last debate. So, Gary, we'll get together and talk about another opportunity. Mayor Burley, if you would...
Deputy Mayor.
Please.
I haven't been to one of these since high school, and that was so long ago. This was so wonderful, and I very much appreciated just some of the language, especially the Seattle group. I just liked the language that you used. Thank you very much. Please come back. Can we do this again here? This is a good exercise for Kirkland. And I have to say, you know, I understand that the judges have made their call, but just a call from a person who's very involved in Kirkland. I think Kirkland is a little bit different city on the east side. So while I might have gone with the Seattle group overall, Kirkland is actually the best place probably in the universe. So. So, you know, you had a problem there. Thank you. Thank you for the East Side group trying to say that we had some sort of transportation thing. I mean, on the East Side, you can't take the bus anywhere. So that was amazing that you even put forward that comment. So, but thank you very much. Please come back. This is probably a great thing. I think the suburban world, the urban world, especially the East Side, is facing some huge problems. This was a good discussion. We could use more of this. Thank you. You've just really graced our town tonight. Thank you all. Please come back.
Don Argue is our president, and he's come today. He had to watch the volleyball also, so he split his commitments. So thank you, Don. And then Jordan wants to give something. And both teams want to give Janice some flowers, just as a token of thank you for hosting us tonight. And we're both here.
I have something to give to our debaters, being our centennial. And I certainly, folks from the West Side.
We have some refreshments out here, and the student who's in charge of this done a lot of work on us, so make sure that you sat out front. And please talk to the debaters and tell them how much you're impressed by them. Thanks so much.
Listen.